Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to see you all today on this bright and sunny day. Feel blessed. Feel grateful. Now, can everyone hear? Is this in a good place for you? Thank Ben. Better. Okay. So today, my talk is going to be a little bit different. Not so different about things, as far as things I've said in the past to you, but it's a little different in that we're going to be really flexible and try some different things with each other and in terms of guided meditation. So, are you feeling open and ready to do that? Good. You don't look so sure, Darla. Gotta pick on somebody, don't we? Okay, so the title of this talk is Darkness in the Light and the Light in the Darkness. This is not exactly a Zen talk so much, but it is a Buddhist talk. It's a talk that brings in a lot of different themes, Buddhist themes. Last week, Tim recited the poem Wild Geese by Mary Oliver, which is a lovely poem. It's a beautiful poem, and one of my favorite lines. And it's a bit of a seasonal poem too, right? The wild geese sounding their sound harsh and exciting, you know. I think when I read it of the blue sky and the bare branches and the geese calling as they fly overhead and how kind of refreshing that is and exciting. And there's also something about when fall comes that's a bit melancholy for people. Do you hear people talking about that? I do. It's like they have trouble just enjoying what's happening right now, which is beautiful weather, sunlight. They're in the future worried about the snowstorms and the cold and the sensory deprivation that we experience in the winter. To a certain degree. But the lines that really have spoken to me always are these. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. So yes, today's a beautiful day and sunny, but we're going to go on a little trip into the what sometimes called the dark emotions, but in Buddhism we call them feelings or vedana or sometimes hindrances. So have you ever felt despair? You don't have to raise your hand. I don't mean depression or low mood, suicidal ideations, insomnia, eating too much or eating too little, or any of those symptoms that we might present at the doctor's office. I'm talking about the kind of despair that more and more people feel at the state of the world today. The despair that we have been good as a culture at camouflaging or ignoring or repressing. And in fact, here's a quote from Rollo May. There are a number of signs that we in America may be on the threshold of a period where we may no longer be able to hide or repress our despair. How does that sound to you? Does that make sense at all? So the events of the past several weeks have been churning and circulating in so many of us, right? The violence, the terrorism in Beirut, in France, in our own country, in Missouri, and many places in our country. The institutionalized racism, it's beginning to pile up. It's beginning to pile up. It's beginning to become unmistakable. That and the news about the climate, our earth, keep coming. And when people suffer anywhere due to all these causes, injustice, climate change makes people suffer, especially the people in third world countries. When we hear of the suffering of others, it affects us. It affects us. Our guts might churn with anger or rage. On social media, we see these calls to vengeance, you know, and retaliation. But that's not our way. Or maybe that we shut down, become chronically numb. I don't want to become numb, do you? I don't want to be numb. Being numb is... it's a major hindrance. It's a major afflictive state. But there's a lot of it. And there's a lot of suffering also. We've been reading in our study group, in the morning study group, which just ended, this book about the Satipatthana, the four foundations of mindfulness, which is a path to awakening, according to Joseph Goldstein and to the Buddha. And I want to read this little passage in here to you, which is from the Buddha's sermon. It's called the Fire Sermon. And it was addressed to thousands of monks who were formerly fire worshippers. Fire worshippers, not fire eaters. Although they could have done that. Monks, all is burning. And what monks is the all that's burning? That's you. You're the monks. You're the bhikkhus today. The eye is burning. Forms are burning. Eye consciousness is burning. Eye contact is burning. And whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither pleasant or painful, that too is burning. Burning with what? Burning with the fire of lust, with the fire of hatred, with the fire of delusion, burning with birth, aging, and death, with sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair. The ear is burning, and he goes on, the mind is burning. Seeing thus, monks, the instructed noble disciple becomes just disenchanted with the eye, with forms, with eye consciousness, with eye contact, with whatever feeling arises, with eye contact as the condition, whatever pleasant or painful, or neither pleasant or painful, becomes disenchanted with the ear, etc., etc. There's a lot of repetition in the Pali Canon. Becoming disenchanted, one becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, one's mind is liberated. So dispassion is not actually numbness or not caring or apathy. Dispassion is like nirvana. Don't we sometimes think nirvana is just some exalted state which is permanent, which is very blissful? But according to a lot of Buddhist scholars and the Buddhist teaching, nirvana is simply, well, it means blown out. What's blown out? It's the absence of the passions, the afflictions, and the burning that we're somewhat prone to. We are prone to as human beings. So today we might call this the stress reduction sermon. But I thought today, fire sermon is really apropos. Really apropos for what's happening all around. So this teaching is that of dependent arising. The way when our, how our minds work through our senses. That the senses are everything. You know, it's all we experience is just related to what we see or feel or sense or touch, what the object is that sparks in us a feeling and a perception and then an impulse, which then can easily become an action, and it all happens really, really fast. So the place to intervene then when what comes up is an afflictive state, whether it be rage or sorrow, extreme sorrow, or whatever it is, doubt, apathy, the place to intervene is in the feeling that arises. We can best intervene there. And what is that intervention? It's seeing, recognizing, seeing meaning, realizing, you know, seeing, and then realizing, wise reflection. Let's see, I've got four steps here. So seeing is step one. Wise reflection is step two. What is the feeling? Is it a hindrance or a factor of awakening? Factor of awakening is technical talk for calm, equanimity, patience, etc. Those are factors of awakening. The next step is to let go, but before we even let go, to aerate or circulate. Aerate or circulate. We can aerate or circulate through the feeling, the affliction, whatever it is, through a number of different ways. Mindfulness practice, just knowing, just being with, without turning away or leaning in. That's mindfulness. That's just sitting. Tonglen practice is a way to aerate and circulate through our being what we're experiencing that is afflictive. Metta practice, loving kindness, unbounded friendliness to ourselves, to a friend, to an acquaintance, to all beings around the world that are suffering. Art is a way. Art is a way to circulate, process our feelings, our states, and movement. And then step four is connection or sharing. So we are social beings, and although this practice we do can be very ascetic, we have to do it ourselves. Someone else can't get us to the cushion. Someone else can't, you know, take us through what we need to do. But at the same time, we're social beings, so we need to connect and share. Connect and share, like we're doing here today. What this place is good for, that we can do that, either through silence, or through just being next to each other and breathing and facing the wall together. The healing practice of staring at a wall. And then reflecting together. Well, that's step four. Bringing what comes up on the cushion or in our lives to each other, into community. So enlightened action, which causes no harm and contributes to the good, is really not so possible without a practice like we do here and these other practices. It's not so possible. Political organizations and nonprofits are really full of people who are trying to do good. They're trying to do good, of course, and they're working on it, but they get burnt out and they experience compassion fatigue, and and they feel burdened because they aren't doing enough of their own work, this work of healing and through mindfulness, concentration, Tonglen, Metta, whatever the practice is. We need to do that. So there's two parts. Doing that is sort of like when you're on the airplane and they say, put the oxygen on yourself first, right? So that's one approach. But another approach is that we can heal ourselves through reaching out and caring for others. Well, they're both true. I'm not negating either one or uplifting one or the other. It's just there's a need for a balance. There's a need for a balance. So now we're going to do something experimental for a Sunday morning, in that for a while I'm going to stop talking for the next 7 minutes, and I'm going to ask you to talk and listen with someone sitting near you. Try to find someone to do that with. If you're really averse to it, that's okay. You can just sit there. No, there's no test or anything. But I do need the bell, Darla, so I can keep the time. So what I will ask you to do for this time is to simply, thank you, turn to a person near you and just share a feeling that you have that's related to recent events in the world, or maybe it could be in your life, but try to keep it brief, just like, I feel like this, because of that, that's all. And so while you say a few lines at the most about that, then your partner just listens, that's all. Just takes it in, like, oh, thanks for sharing that, without necessarily saying that even. Just take it in, and then I'll ring a bell when that is over, and then we should go into the next person. You should wrap it up, and the next person should share, and the partner listen, and then I'll ring the bell, and we'll be done. So we're going to practice bringing mindfulness of our healing, triggered by hearing what's going on in the world, or seeing images of that. Okay. All right. Are you up for it? Good. Okay. So just find someone. Great. Well, it doesn't sound like you had too much trouble with that. Even the introverts were okay, it seems. Wonder how that will sound on the recording. Sorry to interrupt, bring you back. Perhaps you can connect with people during the tea as well around whatever came up for you. So these healing practices of Buddhism, Tonglen and Metta and concentration, mindfulness, all of them are there for us. They help us to develop empathy and compassion and concentration and awareness. So they're very important practices, along with silent sitting. Very important. they develop the elements of the Eightfold Path, and paramita is generosity, right speech, action, right view, right thought. So all these practices fit together. I'd like to teach you a practice now too, which is called Tonglen. Tonglen came from a teaching by a Tisha who lived in the 9th century. So it's essentially a Tibetan Buddhist practice, and it was a secret practice for a long time, for I think probably a century. But when Trungpa Rinpoche came to this country, and other Rinpoches that have come to the West have decided that the West is ready for this kind of teaching now. So it's not that esoteric, but it isn't easy. It's widely practiced. Pema Chodron teaches it, and actually Ted helped by printing out some instructions that you could take with you today so that you could work with it on your own at home if you'd like. But I would like to do a guided meditation with you on this, to do Tonglen. I found Tonglen over many years to be, it's an auxiliary practice to sitting. Sitting is my main practice. But it's really helped me in my work as a chaplain working intermittently at a hospital where really working with people in intense situations of crisis, because it's emergency practice, you know, and Katagiri Roshi used to say that life is an emergency case, you know. Life is an emergency case. So are we ready for it? Ready to stand up in the middle of that? That was always like his, it seemed to be his, maybe it was just that I needed to hear that, and I certainly use it in my work and my life, that teaching of his. But I really keep coming back to that and seeing that he's right, because everything's impermanent, nothing lasts, things become chaotic, we live in a chaotic world, and the person who stays calm in the boat that's going down is a great bodhisattva, a great blessing to everyone that's panicking. So the reason that I do this practice is that I'm suffering, others are suffering, and as a human being, especially with a Buddhist worldview, I want all beings to be happy and free and safe. So this is a way of extending that and offering it. So let's start by just being comfortable. Comfortable, you can close your eyes if you like, or just keep them as you do in Zazen, you know, cast down on the floor, but be relaxed. And start with bringing to mind some being, dead or alive, with whom you feel a deep connection, a parent, child, a beloved pet, grandmother, your dearest friend, a beloved teacher, or someone who's suffering. You would do anything to help this being. Let your whole being turn toward their suffering and your wish that it might be relieved. See how vulnerable she is. Like a mother will do anything to protect her child, you'll do anything to help this friend. Now visualize the suffering, distress of this beloved as hot, dark smoke, and breathe it in through your body. This is not unsafe to do. The moment that this in-breath of suffering touches the sheath of self-centeredness around your heart, the sheath breaks. On the exhalation, breathe out well-being, light, cool, color light blue. Keep doing this. Practice breathing in the texture, the hot, heavy air. And exhaling, visualizing cool, light air. Just continue with the pattern of breathing in heaviness and breathing out your light, your inherent light, until it's familiar. Now, imagine that you're breathing through all the pores of your body. On the in-breath, heavy, hot air enters every pore, and on the out-breath, cool light flows from every pore. Now turn this practice to yourself. Bring to mind a feeling, maybe the feeling that you shared with your partner. And just place something you feel or have felt some distress about, some anger, some frustration. And now let go of that label and see it as that hot, heavy air. And breathe that in. And exhaling your well-being and your wholeness. Your original light, lucidity, and continue with that for yourself. That heavy, dark air is your suffering, your distress. It could be just restlessness, doubt that this practice does any good. Breathe that in. In doubt. Exhale. Light, bright, and well-being. And now finally, let's turn to people the world over, beings the world over that are suffering. Due to all many causes and conditions. And imagine their suffering as this dark, heavier air. And just allow that to come in. It's hot, it's heavy. It has the ability to melt the armoring around the heart. And breathe out light, brightness, well-being, offering that to them through this practice. Just repeat breathing in, extending it out around the world and all the spots where suffering is happening. Breathing out that well-being in the direction of all those places. And now just come back to the breath, to just sitting, mindful of the body, letting go of the practice. Okay. So sometimes people find that to be too overwhelming. I hope that if that's the case, you might try metta practice, which is a little bit simpler. You're still offering, loving kindness and boundless friendliness to yourself and to others and to the entire world, but you're not visualizing breathing in the suffering. I want to read you a poem by Maylie Scott Roshi, who's now passed away, but she was the president of the Buddhist Peace Fellowship. It's kind of a loving kindness Buddhist prayer. May I be well, loving, and peaceful. May all beings be well, loving, and peaceful. May I be at ease in my body, feeling the ground beneath my seat and feet, letting my back be long and straight, enjoying breath as it rises and falls and rises again. May I know and be intimate with body, mind, whatever its feeling or mood, calm or agitated, tired or energetic, irritated or friendly, breathing in and out, aware, moment by moment, of the risings and passings. May I be attentive and gentle towards my own discomfort and suffering. May I be attentive and grateful for my own joy and well-being. May I move towards others freely and with openness. May I receive others with sympathy and understanding. May I move towards the suffering of others with peaceful and attentive confidence. May I recall the Bodhisattva of compassion, her thousand hands, her instant readiness for action, each hand with an eye in it, the instinctive knowing what to do. And may I continually cultivate the ground of peace for myself and others and persist, mindful and dedicated, to this work, independent of results. May I know that my peace and the world's peace are not separate, that our peace in the world is a result of our work for justice. May all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. So, I hope that this is somewhat helpful to you, that these are some things you can use in your practice life, and that'll bring you ease and joy. I have something else we could do, which is also very unusual for Sundays. It's a song. Are you up for singing? We'll need enough of you to be up for it to do this. So those of you who aren't up for it, just kind of move your mouth like you're doing it. I had to do that once when I was at Rimanji Monastery, and there were some Japanese people, and they were chanting. And I was trying to chant along, but I couldn't really do it. So I just kind of sat there and moved my mouth so I could participate. So you can do that. This is a song that's based on a Rumi poem by Rumi, translated by Coleman Barks. And it's also actually based on a poem, a piece by... Oh, no, that's the other one, the beauty one. Okay, this is cool. This is Rumi. And I think it would be a nice sort of upbeat way to end. So I'm going to teach you the words. I'll sing them and you sing them back, call and response. And then maybe we could try to do a little round thing with people on this side and the people on that side. And if it doesn't turn out well, it's okay. We still have fun with it. Okay, so this is, I got this songbook from a guy in Washington State who's a song leader for group singing, and he's a really cool guy. So he did the music for this. So it goes like this. I'll read a phrase. I mean, I'll sing a phrase, you sing back, okay? It doesn't matter how well you sing her. Out beyond ideas.
Out beyond ideas.
Of wrongdoing and rightdoing.
Of wrongdoing and rightdoing.
There is a field.
There is a field.
I will meet you there.
I will meet you there.
All right. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing, of rightdoing, there is a field. I will meet you there. Well, that was very nice. Thank you. We could try it again someday, and maybe we would get it going. It's just fun to see people singing in Zendo. So keep singing and reciting poetry and talking to each other and doing zazen. Thank you. And we have just a few, like maybe at the time for just a couple comments or questions or other songs that you might want to sing sing to the whole group.
Susan?
Yes.
I'd just like to point out that the instructions on how to do Tonglen are out here on the porch on that little bench right by the front door. You're welcome to take them. If we run out, let me know. I'll make some more.
Yeah, hi, Ben.
We'll be uploading recording, so anybody who is near the microphone thinks they might have said something they don't want on the recording.
Thank you. Oh, I didn't notice. That would be me, probably. One.
You okay? Oh, I'm
suffering and joy, it's all mixed up.
Susan, can you say a little bit about the Satipatthana Sutra, when it was written, that kind of thing?
When it was written? Oh, boy. That I don't know. I would have to look in the book to tell you that. It's part of the Pali Canon. Yeah. And there are two sutras. There's one on the mindfulness of breathing, which is pretty essential. And then this one. And in this one is contained, the whole path is contained in this. So I never knew what mindfulness of dharmas meant. It means, apparently, all the hindrances plus the factors of enlightenment plus the Four Noble Truths plus the full path. So basically, it's all the entire path is mindfulness, is what dhammas means in that context. But I'll have to look it up and tell you later when exactly it was written down. Which means it was not written down sooner than at least 100 years after Buddha's death. Yeah, probably about that long. But Ananda, he had everything up here, right? So it was all recorded eventually. I think it was we had a very enjoyable time, but we didn't get so far in this book. We got up to discussing the We got up through into the hindrances and then just a little bit into the factors of enlightenment, and there's a refrain, and it was rich, you know. It's rich to look at that after doing Shikantaza and just sitting for years. It's fun to go back and see where our practice comes from. Last weekend I went to a workshop with Stephen Batchelor, and that was fascinating. His take on things like nirvana and reframing the Four Noble Truths as the Four Noble Tasks. Oh, you were there, yeah. Anyway, it was very fun to listen to him and be thinking about what we've been working on in the study group with the Satipatthana early Buddhist teachings. And there will be a class sometime this year on the Buddha's teachings. Right, Ben?
I'm going to be teaching it.
Yeah. We don't exactly know when, but it's probably spring. Yeah. Probably spring. And if I do recommend this book to folks, another book about working with, this book is the Mindfulness, A Practical Guide to Awakening by Joseph Goldstein, who's a very senior teacher in the Vipassana tradition. And it's kind of like his life's work and practice is in here. And there are quotes from Tibetan Buddhism and from Zen. It's not just, you know, quotes from the Buddhist teaching, from the Pali Canon. He brings in the different traditions to illustrate his points, and it's great to have a study group because it's dense going. But another book I recommend to you, which I didn't bring, but I've been working with it now for years as a chaplain and as a Buddhist who's interested in healing Dharma, is a book called Healing Through the Dark Emotions by Miriam Greenspan. It's a wonderful book where she goes into great detail about this problem of despair, you know, and how in the modern world we don't seem to have time for that. And yet, more and more, I think we're kind of having to wake up to that and work with it, you know. But it's empowering. It's an empowering book. Great book. I recommend it. Okay. Great. Thank you. Now we'll have announcements, right, Darla?
Yeah.